Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the IDFC First Bank Q2 FY22 results conference call hosted by ICICI Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participants' lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Kunal Shah from ICICI Securities. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Vikram, and good evening everyone present on the call. This is Kunal Shah from ICICI Securities. Today we have with us Mr. V. Vaidyanathan, Managing Director and CEO, Mr. Sudhanshu Jain, CFO and Head Corporate Center, and Mr. Saptarshi Bapari, Head Investor Relations from IDFC First Bank to discuss their Q2 FY22 and H1 FY22 earnings. Yeah. Over to you, sir.
Hello, everyone. I'm Vaidyanathan. I'm very happy to speak to all of you. With me is.
Yeah. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Sudhanshu Jain. I am the Chief Financial Officer.
Hi, I'm Saptarshi Bapari, the Head of Investor Relations.
Good evening again. Thank you. We are going to try to take you through some brief numbers, and we hope to be able to address all your questions. Let me just start with a very brief remarks about what we saw this particular quarter. Our loan book at the bank level has now touched 1,17,000 crores. The retail assets of the bank is now 67%. The customer deposits of the bank is 83,900 crores. The CASA ratio is 51%. Capital adequacy is 15.6%. NIM is 5.76%. Our gross NPA is 4.27%, which has come down from last quarter of 4.61%. Net NPA is 2.09%, which has come down from last quarter of 2.32%. Now, while they were the headline items, it's you know, I'd like to just dwell a little deeper and give you some deeper color into the whole thing. Now, in case you have the presentation with you, I'd like to take you straight to page 39, where we start with the retail liability franchise. On the retail liability franchise, which is basically the foundation stone for any bank because you need deposits first to lend and then to make margins and to make profits and so on. As far as deposits are concerned, we are happy to say that our CASA deposits of the bank continued at 46,269 crores this quarter, which let me say is a marginal growth over March, but that's when we reduced our interest rates. I call it marginal because if you see the absolute term numbers, it's kind of flattish. The one key thing has been achieved while in the process because we dropped, you know, savings rates from peak rate of 7% to 5%. Really we are very happy to note that the numbers continue and our customers' relationships are sticky with us. We think it's because of the strong brand we enjoy, really good service we provide to customers. Interest rates are still attractive. Overall, we think that we have a lot of momentum and new number of bank accounts being opened to the bank continues to be very strong. All things are good on the liability side. We really don't worry about it anymore. The other thing is upon the retail deposit rates, we have now dropped it down to really, I guess, among the as low as any other bank in the system, and as low as any large bank. Therefore, on the cost of funds front, we are quite attractive now, and that actually enables us to start participating in prime home loans as well. Number two, our CASA ratio is 51.28%, which we're quite happy about. We frankly had expected this to dip a bit when we dropped our interest rates, but well, it's still 50%+. Number three is our core deposits, what we call the retail CASA, retail term, which is what we call the stickiest form of money, that continues to be strong at 64,000 crores. Basically all things good on the liability side. Like I said, if we want more money, we can raise it. At this point of time, our liquidity ratio is 174%. We'd have loved it to be something like 120%. Clearly we're having like a few 3,000-5,000 crores extra amount of liquidity, which is obviously draining our profitability. We just hope that during the next quarter we can, you know, drain out some of this excess liquidity. The second thing is about granularization of liabilities. There we made scored some big hits actually. We are happy to say that, you know, deposits which is above 5 crores is now come down to as low as 19% from 72% at the time of mergers. You can really see it's a highly diversified liabilities base. Our top 20 depositors, which we are should call ourselves a concentration, the concentration risk, top 20 depositors, you know, was 42%, is now down to 9.4%. You know, so all things good on top 10, top 20, everything. Now I want to move the your attention to page 42. Now page 42 is an important page. This talks about what is the extent of long-term legacy liabilities the bank still carries. As of September 30, 2021, we carry 27,667 crores of legacy liabilities on which we are paying an interest of 8.67%. The maturity of that is basically going to determine when we get, because we're going to obviously reprice this at like 4.8% or even less than that. So we have close to 1,000 crores to be taken out of repaying this money on a P&L sense on an annual basis. Now, the question is, when does it mature? So in this financial year up to FY22, 2,100 crores will mature. In FY23, 6,500 crores will mature. In FY24, 5,700 crores will mature. In FY25, 8,000 crores will mature. So that gives you a color about when we will get to see the color of that 1,000 crores. That is as far as the liability side is concerned. On the asset side, let me keep very quick to you to share with you that the retail lending business has grown quite well. And our retail lending book has now crossed 78,000 crores. Then on page 45, basically, you can see what is the breakup of the 78,000 crores. The home loan is 16% of the retail book. Loan against property is 20%. SME loans is 14%. Wheels is 13%. Consumer loans, which is basically consumer durables, personal loans, and you know, two-wheelers and stuff like that. Wheels is two-wheelers part of wheels. This is just consumer durables and personal loans and such products. That's 19%. And JLG and rural business is 9%. So that gives you a quick color about what is the breakup of our retail portfolio. This is the breakup of the whole book itself. The next is we'd like to break up this portfolio not just within retail, but we'd like to break this up at a bank level. At a bank level, there are two ways to evaluate this. One is to evaluate this as a percentage of funded and non-funded, and the other one is to evaluate as a percentage of funded itself. So let me start with evaluating our book as a percentage of the total book, that is funded plus non-funded. So funded plus non-funded, if you take it as one block, 29% of that is corporate loans, 10% is infrastructure, 12% is loan against property, 9% is home loans, 10% is consumer durables, 8% is SME loans, two-wheelers is 4%, JLG is 5%. So you and credit card is 1%. So you get a drift of the portfolio of the, I think it's 1,41,000 crores is the total funded plus non-funded book, and this is the numbers I told you. Now, if you take this as a percentage of funded book alone, there you know, home loan is 10%, loan against property is 14%, consumer loans is 12%, SME is 10%, and corporate loans is 18%, and infrastructure is 9%. So the short point of these numbers is that now our asset side is really well diversified across, let me say, corporate and even retail is really not one block. Retail, within retail, there is home, there is loan against property, there is consumer durable, there is vehicle loan, there is wheel loan, there is JLG, there is rural. So it is a really diversified business lines that we have. And we think that, you know, more as we go ahead, I'll share with you where is the growth coming from. Now, as far as growth is concerned, where really is it growth? Because after all, retail has grown by 30% during the last quarter. I mean, YOY. So September 20 to September 21. But that's grown by 30%. So and at a bank level, we've grown 10%. Now, where is 30% come from? And that question is answered by thinking about home loans. So home loans has been our biggest growth area. Home loans have grown by 46% year on year. And really, we are finding that the check bounces in home loans is really low. We also find that, of course, if customers have enough LTV and you know, there is the emotional collateral and all that. And also we have found that there is a significant demand coming up in home loans. Of course, it also helps the fact that we have entered into the prime home loan segment now, prime, because we brought our cost of funds down. So that's a big growth for us, 46% there. Loan against property has grown by 25%. SME loans have grown by 24%. Wheels, the basically the two-wheelers and stuff like that, that's grown by 12%. And consumer loans has grown by about 27%. So these are our key growth areas. On the wholesale side, we had brought down the loan book, as you know, in the initial stages of the bank. Basically, we saw so many red flags, and so many accounts were blowing up, and we had just so many problems. So initially, we did bring down the wholesale book. But I'm actually happy to share with you that we are now at a particular, in fact, I'll share the numbers with you. On the wholesale side, at the which is the non-infrastructure corporate loans, and that book is now 21,056 crore. The infrastructure financing over and above this corporate loans I talked about is another 10,000 crores. So if you add 10,000 crores and 21,000 crores, that's 31,000 crores today. Now, what is our wish list? Is it that we want to keep bringing it down? The answer is no. We are frankly quite happy with the way we are now building our wholesale book. You know, we've disbursed fresh loans of close to about 7,600 crores, fresh, new to credit, new to bank of 7,600 crores on the wholesale side since the time of the merger. And I'm happy to say it's like it's as good as, there's no delinquency there, if at all, it's marginal. And it's like pristine. So therefore, we are quite comfortable with what we're doing. But the important thing is that we want to just do this in proportion to our net worth, and we want to do a good smell test on the customers whom we are boarding, so that we don't have any subsequent problems. So net, we want to still maybe, given a choice, we'd like to keep a flat growth. We don't want to degrow it anymore. But really, it will depend on the opportunities in the marketplace and the risk reward and our ability to stay competitive in wholesale, because remember, all the big banks are also fighting it out in that game and really offering very fine prices and so on. Now, that's on the asset side. Now, I'd like to come to asset quality, and then I'll move it from there. Now, on asset quality front, I'm again happy to say that we are witnessing very good trends. First, the numbers put it out of the way. So in June 21, our gross NPA was 4.61%, now it is 4.27%. Our net NPA was 2.32%, now it is 2.09%. Now, in this, during June 21, one large toll road account of about 860 crores had become NPA, because during COVID they could not get collections. Now that account is in, you know, we feel that in the end that money will all come back. It's NPA, all right, 860 crores. But we feel that money will come back, because at the end of the day, the client is begin to start getting revenues. COVID movement has all started some disturbance here. Basically, traffic flow has started and so on and so forth. Therefore, we feel that money will come back. If you adjust for that, meaning if you were not to consider this an NPA for a moment, our gross NPA would be 3.47% and net NPA would be 1.42%. Now let us break up this NPA for you between three categories. One is retail assets, one is wholesale, one is corporate assets, and one is infrastructure assets. On the retail side, pre-COVID, our NPA always used to be like close to 8 or 9 years now, has been at gross of 2% and net of 1%. At COVID, it touched 4% gross. In the peak of COVID, it touched 4% gross and 1.9% net. This quarter, it has come down to 3.45% and 1.66%. So you can see there is a, you know, dip quarter on quarter, two quarters running. Our own guidance is that we have earlier, a few times guided to the market that we will come back to pre-COVID numbers of 2% gross and 1% net. And it just has to happen. We felt that, and we guided for 2022-23 at some stage. But off late, now they're seeing the strong trends on collections that they're seeing. We feel that it will come back earlier than that, maybe 3 quarters or something. But certainly in that zone, maybe we feel that gross will come down to 2-ish and net will come down to 1%. So really, seeing the collection numbers, etc., we're very happy, and we feel very confident of reaching our guidance ahead of time than what we guided earlier. And once, in fact, this retail NPA coming down back to 2% and 1%, which has been a historical rate, is a huge positive news for us, not because the numbers itself are good, but more because the fact that even if an extraordinary event like COVID, could only disturb us maybe for a year, and after that we're back to pre-numbers, then it kind of, like an extraordinary event of a century, couldn't really disturb the long-term strength comes back, it gives us the confidence that we are on good track and so on. Now, the second bit I told you was the wholesale. On the wholesale side, there is a gross NPA now is 2.85 and 0.84, which is X infrastructure. And we're quite happy, I told you, and given a choice, we'd like to keep the book there. We have no intention of degrowing it. If it degrows, I'd say probably despite our efforts. Third is infrastructure. A gross NPA and infrastructure is 15.8%. And net NPA is 9.8%, but really this is legacy. And the good news is the book is only 10,000 crores now. Sooner or later, maybe by the next 2-3 years, we'll wind this book down once and for all. So that's so much quickly. I talked to you about the key indicators and the gross and the asset quality. I'd like to stop here, and I'd like to request Sudhanshu to take us through the profit and loss that happened during the quarter. Thank you, Sudhanshu.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Vaidyanathan. Starting with the income, the bank's core operating income, which comprises of NI and fee and other income, and excluding trading gains, it grew by 41% on a YOY basis from Rs. 2075 crores to Rs. 2930 crores. This included a growth in NI itself from Rs. 1784 crores to Rs. 2272 crores. As a result, the NIM for the quarter reached 5.76%, which was 4.91% in Q2 of last year and 5.51% in the preceding quarter. The NIM expansion was driven by gradual improvement in the cost of funds, mainly cost of deposits, as we have been bringing the saving rates lower. Coming on to the fee front, as we all know that last year during Q2, there was a COVID lockdown and the economy was stalled. But this year, whereas Q1 was quite impacted due to COVID wave 2, in Q2, economy has normalized quite a bit. Our disbursements are higher by 70% as compared to Q2 last year, and that has contributed to higher loan processing fees. Further, we have seen a huge traction in transaction-led fees and higher fees from distribution of third-party products and wealth management. The third part of the income is trading gains, which for the quarter were lower at Rs. 122 crores versus Rs. 335 crores in Q2 of the last year. So that's all on income. So I said initially that we had a robust increase in fee in total income. Core total income, which was at 41% on a YOY basis. As the economic activity picked up, the OPEX also increased by 47% from Rs. 1610 crores in Q2 last year to Rs. 235 crores in the current quarter. Again, this increase was linked to higher loan originations and higher collection expenses as the collection activity sort of picked up during the current quarter. We also continue to invest in digital and other initiatives, and also had opened up a few branches and ATMs last year, and hence that increase is also sort of coming in if we compare versus the last year's Q2 quarter. The combination of all this has led to our core PPOP, excluding trading gain, increasing by 23% on a YOY basis It has reached rupees 571 crores in Q2 of FY22, and this was rupees 465 crores in Q2 of the last year. On the provisions front, provisions for the quarter are lower at rupees 475 crores. This was rupees 674 crores in Q2 of last year, and this is significantly lower than rupees 1872 crores of provisions which we had taken in Q1 of this year. This quarter, we have utilized COVID provision of rupees 560 crores. We were holding COVID provision of rupees 725 crores at the beginning of Q2, and after this utilization, we are carrying forward rupees 165 crores into the future quarters. As we had indicated earlier, that we expect the provision in H2 to be significantly lower than H1. The profit before tax increased by 72% on a YOY basis to reach rupees 218 crores in Q2. The corresponding number for Q2 last year was rupees 126 crores. The profit after tax again has been an increase of 50%, and it was rupees 152 crores for the current quarter.
So we'd like to stop here and maybe take questions. By the way, the way we written up the investor presentation, we haven't left nothing for imagination. We've given descriptive commentary out there. But still, happy to take questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on your touchtone phone now. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. We will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. To ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone phone now. We have a first question from the line of Manish Dhariwal from Fiducia Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for this opportunity. And this question is from Vivekna. Very good evening. It's a tall task, managing bank and the condition that one is in right now. As I understand,
it's not lines not clear.
Is it better now?
Yes.
I'm actually talking on the handset. Is it better? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, thank you so much. We've spoken about the way the liability side has been kind of controlled and excellent work. Now, I basically want to understand that, we are looking at the NIM of 5.76, now, which is a very, very fantastic NIM so long as the NPAs don't rise. Now, we are also focusing on prime home loans, where a significant amount of our asset book is now developing. So how, request your explanation on, how this NIM of 5.76 is happening when the prime home loan cannot be very high and the corporate book cannot be very high, because a good corporate book today cannot happen at a very good NIM.
Let's take one question at a time, so that makes our life easier. So this prime home loans, so to say, segment is a segment that has started recently. It has not yet, become a significant part of the book. So it has not yet started impacting the NIM. So we'll wait for its impact to play out as it becomes a more significant portion of the book. And I agree with you on the corporate side. Really good top corporates don't want to pay you anything more than maybe 7% or 8%. So 8 is rather rich in today's world. And you don't get much rates either on the corporate side or on the home loan side. But the good thing about home loans is that the operating cost is very low, because you get a 20-year loan or a 25-year loan. So therefore, you can still manage to make a decent return.
Okay. So given the focus on the prime loans and also, what is your understanding of how the NIM is going to pan out going forward?
It's stabilized from here, because end of the day, it's not that we're doing only home loans, which is, of course, a relatively low margin, but we also do our other businesses, which are giving us better yields, on which we have, short of using the word master, but I can say specialized
for the last maybe 10 years at a stretch. So we will continue to do those businesses, our loan against property and SME financing and wheels financing and two-wheeler financing. We'll keep doing all of that. So blend will continue to hold a good name, I'd say. But it is stabilized. Right? You can't just for clarity. Just because things moved from 4 to 5.7, doesn't mean it'll keep climbing. It'll stabilize. I guess probably like closer to 6 or something. It should stabilize.
Oh, at 6, I think it'll be fantastic. Another thing that I wanted to understand about was that amongst the banks, you have a very good focus on the fintech side of it. Like to support the fintech and get business out of that side. So if you could just give some idea on that, as you know, how that side of the business is panning out, and what is the cost implication and what is the revenue building implication from there?
Well, we like the business a lot because there are two kinds of fintechs, as you know. One is, of course, the set of fintechs who are helping you along in the processing journey. For example, if some fintech is there to help you scan bank statement and give you a processed information about customer balances, etc. So that's one sort of fintech. The other sort of fintech are people who originate for you. We like both of them. So we do have digital partnerships where they originate and for us it comes on our books. So in those cases, typically the operating cost, etc. is quite low. And it's a straightforward, marginal, profitable for the bank.
Okay. So I get that. Now, one thing is that over a period of time, obviously these people will themselves get to write the asset on their books. So how will that kind of, is it going to be emerging as a big area or big source of growth for the bank, these fintechs, originating fintechs?
I don't know what is big, because big is all a relative statement. But yeah, I mean, end of the day, the origination through partnerships, etc., is part of growth, and definitely it will be important. See, because India is so underserved, underpenetrated, and all that, we all know the numbers. So we don't have to reach everybody ourselves. So if it comes to the ecosystem and partners originating, we like to partner with them and we do it. So, I mean, what I'm trying to say is that it will be important, of course, for us in the times to come. Important.
Yeah, because why I'm asking this is that because, while our target is to look at, say, 20-25% growth, we are still at about 10% YY. So that's where, this question is coming from.
No,
asset growth.
No, nothing wrong with the question. We appreciate the question. See, the 10 you are not seeing because the wholesale book has degrown, like I told you, not by choice, but it's just happening to degrow a bit. So it's a blend is seeing 10, but if you see retail as such, it's going pretty well. I mean, we don't see any problem growing. I mean, we never suggest 30%, but certainly 25% growth, year on year for a long period of time, honestly, I don't see a problem at all. Whether it comes through partnerships or whether it comes to partnerships or our models that we've owned for a long time, or a mix of them all, we'll keep playing all the cards.
Right. That sounds good. My last question is that are there any further plans on capital dilution in terms of further new shares issuance?
Not now. We're still running capital equity upward of 15%. So we're not talking that language yet.
Okay. So maybe in FY23.
Well, we'll have to see, as it emerges.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for answering.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have next question from the line of Ishan Agarwal from Erevna Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity. And just a request, if we could get the presentation at least 45 minutes before the call to study and analyze the information.
I know it's our mistake this time because, we were racing against time. The board meeting ended and then we had a press release to issue and a investor presentation to load and this meeting to take. So we were just pressed for time. So maybe next time we'll do a better job next time.
So a couple of questions. Firstly, what is the current blended yield on the retail loan book that we have? And given that our focus going forward will be growing the home loan portfolio faster than the overall retail book, where do we see yields for the retail book settling, maybe say in FY 2023-24?
Yeah, see the I think all of that blends back into the net interest margin actually. So that, we kind of guided that this should settle down like 6-odd%.
Okay. So actually, I had a question regarding our guidance too. So at the time of the merger, when the guidance for NIMs was given, that is in December 2018, the bank was netting off the BC commission from the interest income.
Yeah.
Now, since we are grossing it, ideally our NIM guidance should have been upped in our presentation.
That's correct. But we anyway upgraded the guidance. But for the since you asked a very good question, let me just, for the benefit of other viewers, let me just explain to them what you asked. It may not strike them. See, basically the expenses that was being booked in our subsidiary company, expenses that were being booked in the subsidiary company are now being grossed up. So it's coming up in the NIM line as well as in the OpEx line. So that's the point the gentleman who asked me just now just asked. So as a result of which, the impact, it was about 50-odd basis points. How much? 40. 40. The impact is about 40 basis points. So therefore, in other words, NIM went up by 40 basis points for this factor alone, and our OpEx also went up to that extent. So that's the point we were making. Now, the quick answer for this is that because this is how even our auditors felt it was more appropriate representation, and hence it was done. Now, let me just continue. So basically, because of that one impact, our NIMs went up by about 40 basis points, and our OpEx also went up correspondingly. So it is a P&L neutral item. Now, to answer your question about guidance, yeah, of course, when we guided for a NIM of 5 to 5.5. Now we are guiding for 5.5 to 6. So you can see these are automatically adjusted.
Okay. And the bank's core operating other income has really surprised me positively. I mean, I'm wondering whether there is any one-off component or the entire thing can be assumed to be granular in nature.
Yeah, broadly granular, yeah. No, I mean, we're not, we're building a core business that is strong on the core. So if you see, when the loan book grows, automatically the income grows and our cost of funds is only dipping now, but book is growing. So naturally, the income is beginning to grow.
And when we, okay.
We are trying to build, just to get the philosophical point out of the way we are trying to build the bank is that everything we do should be, should be sustainable, meaning that, we wake up quarter two, quarter three, quarter four, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year. We are trying to build something which will only increase one way. And that can come only when we do good quality core businesses.
Right. Okay. So another question that I have is regarding our term deposits. So in every presentation in the past, we have given as an extra information that retail grew by this much and wholesale degrew by this much, and hence our TD was flat. But this time, I think that information was missing. So can we just know what was the growth in the retail term deposits year on year?
No, we have not. If you go and compare the slides, there is no information that's available in the previous slide. It's not available this time. So you've got to really check the facts. So everything, basically, it's the same format. We just plugged in new numbers. So I want to correct you on that. Secondly, with regard to term deposits, the exact numbers we'll share with you. Yeah, you have any numbers? What's he asking?
Yeah, so term deposits have grown on a year-on-year basis. The increase is about 5,000 odd crores. The team is just checking, but it should be broadly around that. So that continues to grow. And even if you see the CASA numbers, that has grown by 53% on a YOY basis.
One second. As I spoke, I referred to a particular page. You can see page 41. It's all there. May I know your name who speak just now? I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Ishan Agarwal.
Ishan. So Ishan is there. The information asking is there on page 41. So that's why I said nothing has been omitted.
Oh, sorry. Actually, the thing was, the time was pretty less. So to see the presentation, I'm sorry about that.
No, that's our mistake. So yeah, the term deposits has been, if you take a YOY number, it's been flat. It's like minus 4%. But the reason why this is happening is that as I told you, even at the current deposit rates, we are finding that our liquidity is like rather high, like high meaning quite high. So therefore, we are dropping rates. So I don't know if any of you heard the AGM speech also, and even our public commentary on this issue, that we are going to stall the growth of deposits for a while because this is just too much cash and it's a significant drag for us. So if, even next quarter, don't expect to see any growth in deposits because if, you know, if deposits keep coming like this, then it's all going to drag us down on profitability.
Right. So for the last next question quarters, from my front.
So for one or two quarters, expect that our growth, that our deposits will stay where they are. It's planned that way. And we want to use up this cash and disbursals, and then we'll start growing again. And frankly, we can grow deposits anytime we want. That we're very confident
of. Right. So last question from my front, sir. Anything that we've heard from the management of the telecom company or any communication from the DOT regarding the bank guarantee?
Nothing apart from the public, nothing that's, that is not publicly known.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We have next question from the line of Yishwan from Point 72. Please go ahead.
Hey, sir. Am I audible?
Yes, you are. You can please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks so much for the opportunity. Just a couple of questions. Firstly, just a data keeping question. Do you mind provide us with the gross slippages this quarter and also the write-off number?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Do you mind provide us with the gross slippages this quarter and also the write-off number for this quarter?
Gross slippages. Yeah.
So gross slippage for the quarter was about 1600 odd crores, and this was a 40% lower than Q1 the previous quarter. And on a net slippage basis, the slippage was 900 crores, which was about 50% lower than Q1. Write-offs during the quarter was about 1000 crores, and that also was about 50% lower than the previous quarter.
So we will give you a little more color than what Sudhanshu left you with, what Sudhanshu shared. Let me give you two data points that will help you understand our SMA book better. Now, when you say slippage, obviously it comes into SMA. Now, depends on the stage of the bucket. Now, in the our total SMA 0 plus 1 plus 2 as of 31st March 2021 was 5,016 crores. Our SMA of 0 plus 1 plus 2 as of 30th June was 12,398 crore. You could see clearly that when the wave 2 happened, that is in April, May, June 21, then basically there was no moratorium, but there was, you know, field collection didn't happen. So 5,016 grew to 12,398. But we are rather happy among ourselves that this 12,398 as of 30th September has come back sharply or dropped sharply to 7,956 crores. So that's a steep reduction. And our own projection, internal projection for December is that it is going to come down sharply again. So we feel that this is the basis under which we are beginning to guide that our gross will become 2 and net will become 1 and credit loss will become 2%. And let me give you one more color to all of you, even if unsolicited, but let me share some information with you. Now let me break up this SMA 0 plus 1 plus 2 between urban and rural. In rural is where we saw the biggest impact. In rural, as of 31st March, SMA book 0 plus 1 plus 2 was 528 crores. As of 30th June, it increased to 6,258, just, you know, like a, almost like a en masse movement of the MFI book happened between 31st March to 30th June. Now, as of September, that number has come down to 3,690 crores. So basically the point is that the big impact was seen in the rural business. Now let me tell you the urban business. In the urban business, as of 31st March, our SMA book, SMA that is 0 plus 1 plus 2, was 4488 crore. As of 30th September, it's already come down to 4267 crore. So our short summary, why I shared the numbers with you, was to just tell you that when wave 2 happened, the whole impact, or let me say the big impact, was on the rural side. Urban book is like, is come back to pre-wave 2 levels already, in fact better than pre-wave 2 levels. I just hope that color helped you understand what happened in our book actually.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's really helpful. Next one is on the OPEX front. So understand we are investing for growth right now, but it would be very helpful if you can give us some guidance on the second half. So we got about 233.6 billion OPEX this quarter. How should we think about the run rate for the second half?
Can you repeat the question? We couldn't hear you very clearly.
Sorry, am I audible now? My bad.
Right.
Yeah, so I just want to get some guidance on the second half OPEX run rate. You know, because this quarter we did about 23, 34 billion. Quite a sharp increase, but understand that we are investing right now. Hopefully you can share some guidance on the second half OPEX.
Yeah, our OPEX, I'd imagine that will, I guess, quarter on quarter will go up a bit, but maybe not at the same pace. And this quarter OPEX went up compared to the Q1 because the you know, the economy, you know, in Q1, as you know, there was very less economic activity, there was no disbursals, so dispersal related fees, etc., need not be paid. Suddenly this quarter disbursals came back so strong, so we had to incur the costs, origination costs. Similarly in collections, in first quarter very little collections, so field collections, so the billings was lesser. This quarter collections came back strongly, and that's why you saw the SMA numbers. I told you how SMA has come down so sharply, so we had to pay for collections. So let me just say that basically economic activity revived, business improved, so the expenses came with related to that. And when we look ahead, therefore, we feel that, you know, with, of course, the increased business, you know, ours is such a business where there is a certain amount of costs that are incurred with the origination itself, because to the extent it is sourced by direct marketing associates, etc., you simply pay. Similarly, to the extent collection agencies collect, you pay. So to that extent, there is some variability involved in it. But things should stabilize from here, because as you start doing more of digital and all that.
Right, got it. Thanks, that's very clear. And last one from me is on the COVID buffer write-backs. I'm a little bit surprised that, you know, we, if I'm not wrong, we wrote back 560 crores this quarter. That's more than, I think, 350 crores we built in the last quarter. And I'm a little bit surprised because none of the other peers seems to be writing back provisions, or not at least at this extent. And I guess there might be some third wave threat over there. So just want to get your, you know, rationale and also thinking about the provision write back part.
There is actually, on as far as collections are concerned, there are certain benchmarks we use for us to understand what the next quarter's provisions will be. And they are basically three. One is how many of our customers are bouncing their checks, that is check bounce. When we say check, we mean check, mandate, everything. Number two, we check of those bounces, how many of them are being to be, we are able to collect on them within the same month. We call it collection efficiency. Third, we check that of the accounts that we have provided for in the past, how much are we able to, let me say, recover. We call it recovery. Somehow we are finding on all of these three fronts, things are getting better than, even better than pre-COVID. You know, note what I'm saying. I hope you noted that. Better than pre-COVID. Not that COVID has affected our life. I'm telling you, better. So therefore, when we when we do our own modeling internally and project what our numbers for Q3 and Q4 will be, we can already see that our requirement for provisions for Q4, Q3 is going to be sharp, lesser than Q2, and provisions for Q4 is going to be like sharply lesser than Q3. So when we see those projections like that, we just felt there's no need for these COVID provisions to keep, and that's why we took it back. I hope I believe we'll be right, but you wait for Q3 results and wait for Q4 results, you'll see it for yourself. We are quite confident about that.
Got it. Thanks so much. Just if I may squeeze and ask one on the IDEA provision, the provision on the IDEA account, are we writing that back? I think we got 15% coverage, right? Are we writing that back in the second half as well?
It is 15 or 25 depending on whether you see it with the non-fund or without or only funded. So it's depending on how you calculate that. But yeah, at this point of time, you've seen the public news. You heard about the fact that they are bringing in funds. They heard about Vodafone bringing in funds. You heard about the fact that government is supportive and government doesn't want to make this country a duopoly country. So you heard all the right. We are encouraged with what we heard. So as of now, we believe that. We believe that our provisions are appropriate. Now we got to finally wait and see. On the due rates, and we deal with it. We dealt with so many things. We deal with it also.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We have next question from the line of Manav Vijay from The Financial. Please go ahead.
Yes. Thank you very much, sir. Am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. So, sir, I have three questions actually. So, first is actually on the loan book growth. Second is on actually cost to income, and third is on CASA. So the first on loan book growth. So, you have been guiding for last few quarters that you will try and grow your retail book by around 3,000 to 4,000 crores every quarter, and that much kind of a degrowth we will have on the wholesale book side. Now, in this quarter, you are saying that you are getting comfortable as far as the wholesale side is concerned with the size of the book that you have, and you will try and basically increase that book as well. Now, retail book will continue to grow 20 to 25%, the pace at which it was growing. So now, does that mean that on the overall book, the growth could be slightly higher, maybe let's say 20 to 25% at the overall book instead of just at the retail book?
See, the wholesale is not a strategy to degrow, because like I said, we're getting comfortable with the kind of book size we have, like 31,000 odd crores. But it's kind of stabilized. We don't claim that we're not saying that we'll grow it from here in any aggressive manner. I want to make that clear, because we are happy with the quality of the book we have on the wholesale side, because whatever all the problems that had to be accounted for has been accounted for in the last 4-5 years. So therefore we expect this to stabilize from here. So I don't say that we'll grow it from here, because you know, in the wholesale book to even keep it flat at this point of time, you see the Indian economic wholesale rate, book is not exactly growing either. It's kind of flat only. And there is intense competition in this business from the large banks, like crazy. So for our bank to even keep flat will probably be an achievement. So we don't intend to grow it from here. The rest remains retail. Retail, like I told you, about 25%. And by the way, it doesn't mean that the book will necessarily be flat, because remember there's a infrastructure book of 10,000 crore that we have no intention to grow. So that will wind down. So the non-infrastructure book of 21,000 crores, well, it's a hard climb for it to even sustain itself at 30,000 in the sense that to replace the infrastructure book.
Sure.
All I meant to say is that we don't want to run it down. We want to, given a choice, we'd like to keep it flat. The rest, we'll have to see how the market behaves.
Okay. My second question is actually on the cost income side. So now for FY20, you were close to 74% cost to income. At 21, again, you are almost at similar number. You have done slightly better as far as this H1 is concerned. Now, considering the way you are now, growing your retail book aggressively, your cost of funds are coming down. Is it possible for you to guide us for FY23 and for 24? What kind of cost to income is possible?
We've not put out a public number about how much it will come down to, but definitely you can take it that this will come down. As to what extent it will come down, I don't think we put out a number, but maybe we'll try to. So the thing is that if you just do one favor and go to page 20 of the experience we've had on this front, even in Capital First, when the business was being set up, a lot of people misunderstand this thing of cost to income. They look at our cost to income, say, oh my God, you're running at 80%, other banks are running at whatever, maybe 40% or 50%. And they say, oh my God, you got too high of cost to income. But they're all missing the point. We are a new bank. We're not just a new bank. We're a new bank with starting up loan book of 75,000 crores of IDFC and some 25,000 crores of Capital First. New bank, 1 lakh crore of loan book, no CASA. What does the bank do? And that too with very low NIMs. So, and the NIM pre-merger was 1.56%. So, and even if you adjust back for that 40 basis points what the previous gentleman asked, it's probably 1.9%. Fine, what do you do with 1.9% have such a large loan book and no CASA and no retail liabilities? So what does the CEO then do? Then you go out and put the expenses, put the branches, put the network, do whatever you have to do. So that comes with an OPEX. Now, therefore, our OPEX cost income today in the early stage of a bank, infrastructure bank converting to this one, cannot be compared with some bank that's been there for 25 years and already amortized all its OPEX. So this is the key point to note. Therefore, what is the guidance? Guidance is follows. I want to take you back in time just to remind you, not for anything else, for those of you who are investing Capital First. Please, at that time in 2009-10, cost income was 128%. Then when we started building retail, for 4 years it was 80%. It didn't come down, it kept going up actually. It went to 72 to 74 to 78 to 80 for 4 years. Then when the scale started building up from there on, then 80 came down to 71 in 2014, 59 in 2015, 51% in 2016, 51 in 2017, and 48 in 2019. So the point I'm trying to say is that there's no shortcuts in life. This is the way it is. And initially, when the bank is built up, cost income is high. But I am I'm very sure that now onwards, when the scale will build, cost income will come down. So you will see our bank touching 50% kind of cost income in due course. There's no doubt about that. It's just the way the model is.
So, sir, I appreciate your point completely. And I'm sure that, yes, you will hit 50%. Just that, I would say the way you have built the bank in last couple of years, so as far as the liability side of bank is concerned, you have taken care of that absolutely well. Now, as far as the asset side is concerned, you have taken very well. As far as the wholesale book is concerned, retail is actually now starting to actually fire up. So what I'm basically trying to understand is, as far as the operating jaws are concerned, so when can we expect them to open? Maybe 23, 24, 25?
No. Next, you will see the operating jaw expand in 22, 23 itself. By the way, we don't have to wait that long. So basically, think of it that this year, in 21, 22, think of it that you'll probably be here where we are. If you take out the treasury income and think of the core income and core OPEX, without any, these kind of incomes like treasury and all, which, disturb the equations. If you look at the core to core, it'll probably be 80% right now. And maybe for the next one or two quarters, we'll probably be here. I can't give you more happier expectations from that, because it won't happen. And that's the way the model is built. I'm not disappointed either. But when you wake up in 22-23, which is not very far from now, which is 6 months from now, so when you see 22-23, we expect the jaw to open positively, definitely. We feel the cost income will come down. And then 23-24 and 24-25, basically next 3 years, you can see that a cost income will come down. You can see that our ROA will expand. You can see that our ROE will expand. It is just going to happen. It doesn't matter what happens to that one telecom account. We'll deal with it by the law of the land. So it doesn't matter. This is the key thing. So basically the grunt work, let me say, has been done over the last 3 years. It's been established. Now is the time to scale up and cost to income to come down. You will see it happen. You just have to, I mean, many of your investors have been patient with us for 2-3 years. Now you watch the game for the next 3 years.
Perfect. My next question would actually be on CASA side, sir. So the kind of job that you have done on CASA is actually really commendable. 51%, I think you are second highest after I believe Kotak. And now you have reduced rates because the liquidity that you have, you're finding it difficult to deploy. So let's say whatever that we see changes in your balance sheet, whatever advances that growth that you were having, so you were basically trying to just keep the borrowing stable, and you were growing the advances side when let's say whatever the deposit growth was happening. So now for next, maybe, I don't know, let's say 1 year or so, with, let's say, CASA being stable at this 51-50 kind of a number, you think that you have enough cash because of the LCR plus extra deposits to grow the advances book without, let's say, again, increasing rates on CASA to attract higher deposits?
Yeah, so I'll take that question. So again, as you rightly said, it would be a function of liquidity. And currently we are sitting on ample, actually, LCR is as at 174%. And if you see the numbers, we have consciously also slowed down the deposit growth, right? We brought down the rates. Plus recently, a month back, we also brought down rates on the FD front. Having said that, right, as sort of growth sort of comes back in H2, which we are very confident of, right, we would want that some of this liquidity which we are carrying excess normalizes. And the regulatory requirement for LCR is 100%, but internally we will definitely keep a good cushion over that. But certainly 174% is a very high level at present, right? It also has a drag on our NI. So we will continue to sort of accordingly pace our deposit growth and to meet our asset requirements. If you see our balance sheet numbers, we have also, the borrowings have also increased by a few thousand crores over last couple of quarters. That is because we have raised alternate money in the form of refinance where the rates were very attractive. And it also gave us long-term money. So we'll balance it between deposits and borrowings, and we will pace it according to our asset needs.
And to your question about whether we'll increase interest rates, we have no plans to at this point of time, but we never want to take fixed position on these things. We'll see, you know, suppose 3 quarters from now, our growth is strong and we need deposits, who knows what we'll do.
Thank you. We have next question from the line of VP Rajesh from Banyan Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity and congratulations on a good set of numbers. Most of my questions have been answered, but just one question regarding the letter that you received from IDFC Limited. I was just wondering if there was any board discussion on that, and you know, what are we thinking in terms of the reverse merger with the IDFC Limited, if at all.
I can only tell you what's already public, so rest what is not public, I can, when we'll inform the exchanges, then we'll inform you. As of now, the only facts are that they have written to us saying that, you know, please let us know how you think about it. And because we meaning IDFC Limited, have said that we are planning to exit our positions in the companies we have, and we will look forward to talking to you. So that's their position. We discussed this at our board. naturally, because it's come to a bank and it had to be discussed at the board, and we'll be responding to them. And whatever we come out, whatever we respond to them, we'll make it public.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Thank you. We have next question from the line of Sagar Shah from SK Analytics. Please go ahead.
Yeah, this is Sagar Shah. First of all, congratulations, sir, for excellent set of numbers.
Thank you, Sagar.
Yeah, I just had one question actually. Regarding our, as you said about our corporate loan book, about you in the future, you ought to maintain the corporate loan book as and where it is right now, around maybe 30% as you have guided earlier.
We wish to.
Okay, so basically, I just wanted to know that in the corporate loan book, which areas are you exactly targeting actually? Because in the past we have had severe burns regarding our loan book actually, and you can say the previous lending of IDFC has had something like ill effects. So for the future, which measures have you taken, or maybe what underwriting skills are you planning to take for better corporate loan book quality?
We understand your concern, and I think it's a legitimate concern you have. Even you know your comment about the erstwhile management, whatever they booked, it's not that they did anything bad. I mean, just that the maybe the economy went south and the infrastructure cycle went bad. Maybe it's not. I don't think they did anything intentionally. But coming back to the point. We have actually instituted many controls in being able to handle the corporate book, whatever we have booked post-merger. We have put many, like I'll tell you some examples if that gives you a color. We say that any entity that comes, we say that the smell should feel good, because there are so many entities where numbers may be good, but you know, people just don't say right things about them when you touch around. So we actually tell every relationship manager that you've got to attach your own personal assessment of what you think of the group on the basis of what you touched and smelt about in the market. Number two, we say that every RM has to sign off when you make a recommendation so that your name is on the file forever and that you recommend this case on the basis of your strength. Number three, we look at the cash flow, and then we want to convince ourselves that the cash flow is good. Number four, we look at leverage ratios. Number five, we say that we ask ourselves this question that if this person will raise equity, will this person be the sort of person who will get equity in the marketplace if they were to raise and if they wanted to get the necessary funds or equity or even debt for that matter? Do you think other people will lend to this person if they were to be out in the market? Then of course we check about security, and so on. So basically, whether it is financials, leverage, cash flow, smell, references, we do all these checks, and finally we have kept a pretty low threshold to go to the credit committee, because we feel that more eyes are better than one. So, and we don't take it emotionally if some member of the credit committee feels I'm not comfortable, I'm going to drop it. Okay, drop it. I mean, basically we feel, unless we feel strongly about a proposal. So what I'm trying to say is that we just put a set of things about the way we think about this. We actually made a grid around it, and we got to necessarily fill up every part of the grid to feel comfortable. So we've done all that, and frankly, it's paid off very well, and we thought this through pretty early in the game, around 2000, very early in 2019. And I'm happy to say, like, we've done over 120 accounts, not a single one of any material size has blown up within 3 years.
So basically, in your experience of last 3 years, are you targeting any sector, or have you something like shortlisted some few sectors which are actually of your interest to lend in the future?
It's more about what we don't want to do, because we do, corporate sector is a pretty wide area. It's very hard to pick a finger and say that we want to do only three or four, because we're not exactly the only lenders in the market to be so choosy. So we are in the market. So
writing down your infrastructure loan book. So obviously,
exactly, for example, you don't want to do infrastructure, for example. Yeah, it's a no-no. Or you say that, listen, if there's some particular industry itself has a pretty gloomy future, then you say don't say no to that. So you basically, it's more of exception. Otherwise, we're okay. We do, even if an NBFC came to us, and we felt comfortable with an NBFC, we'll do it. I mean, we're happy to do it. So it's basically our comfort based on those criteria. And these are pretty written down criteria. It's not purely to anybody's judgment.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you so much. All the best for the future.
Thank you very much.
We take the last question from the line of Shashank Sharma from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. I had a couple of bookkeeping questions. First, on that toll account, so is the ongoing, apart from the 3-4 month delay that has already happened and which caused it to slip, are the monthly collections today 100% on that account? The forthcoming collections?
So I'll answer that question, Sudhanshu here. So definitely collections are improving as sort of the economic activity is picking up. But having said that, it's still not back to sort of pre-COVID levels for that entity. Even into this quarter, however, we continue to see repayments. Like if you see the numbers, the principal outstanding has come down further by rupees 16 crores during the current quarter, and where it slipped into NPA into the last quarter. So we feel that we have a provision of 15% on this account. We don't foresee any economic loss in this account, and we are hopeful that sort of as the toll collection picks up further, this account condition should improve. And
sure, sir.
And before you go to the next question, let me just say that our guidance, you know, on this bit about having 2.5% credit loss to the average book for the year, what we said last quarter or so, that completely stays. So even after wave two, it stays, so we don't have a problem with that. But only important thing to note is, so that we want to be clear, we guide you correctly, is that that number is under normal business operations, including COVID. It doesn't take care of that one telecom account where our funded exposure is 2,000 crores, and our provisions are about like 480 crores. So if that account were not to pay, then all bets, then you know that's an extra impact on us. But that's not part of the storyline of 2.5%.
So hopefully next time when we are on the call, that problem would be solved for us. because I think the repayments are scheduled in that manner. So let's see on that. I have one more question
for India's sake. Because if it doesn't pay, then there is a law of the land. So but for India's sake, we hope it doesn't go there.
Right. So one question: if we can give the breakup of the write-offs that have been taken in the H1. Asset-wise, the asset class-wise, if you can throw some light there, that will be great.
No, so as I mentioned earlier, that write-offs during the quarter was about 1,000 odd crores, and this was 50% lower than the previous quarter.
Right, so asset mix, can we get something as in the rural book, in percentage terms, if you don't want to give absolute numbers, or on a broad basis, so we understand LAP and housing would be limited, but apart from that, some color there would be great.
No, so we haven't called out that number, but okay. These are the
broad numbers. What number?
No issues, sir. No issues.
Okay.
One last question. Apart from this 2.9% restructuring.
By the way, one comment on the write-off that I earlier mentioned to you that every month now, every quarter now, we're getting recoveries from the past.
Right.
So what was provided is a provision, is a formula. You know, you have so much of 90, DPD, 120, 150, 180, 360, whatever, and then we take certain provisions. But that doesn't mean client doesn't owe you the money. So we are getting recovery against the past dues. So that is one of, so I just want to let you know that that's one good thing in retail, that even if the customer behind schedule, you can hope to get many of them to pay back. Sorry, back to you.
Sure, sir. So one last question from my side. Apart from this 2.9% restructuring, is there any additional restructuring under erstwhile MSME schemes, etc., that we have?
That's part of this number.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Thank you, sir. Wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you. Frankly, all of you were very engaged and asked really good, insightful questions. So we want to thank you for being here with us today and asking us whatever you did.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Kunal Shah for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Vaidyanathan, sir, for patiently answering all the questions and laying out the strategy as well as the guidance in terms of how we would be moving. And wishing everyone happy Diwali in advance. Yeah, thanks.
Happy Diwali to all of you, friends. Thank you.
Thank you, Kunal, and thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks, Kunal.
Bye-bye. Yeah.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of ICICI Securities, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining with us, and you may now disconnect your lines.